Welcome, gentle listeners. We have a special treat for you today. I have a special guest with me. Would you care to introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. My name is Doug Wagner, and I'm a writer for Image Comics.
All right. And for those unfamiliar, the two big books you're talking about here today are Plastic and The Hard Place. Let's start with The Hard Place. How would you just, what's the elevator pitch?
The elevator pitch is it's John Wick meets Baby Driver. So I refer to it as action noir, which is kind of like a cross between action movies and crime noir. And Nick Rommel and I were trying to do something really different with the book. So we went total, like, here's an action book in a comic.
Excellent, excellent. So what, what challenges did you face telling the story, converting what would normally be these car chase explosions and, you know, crazy bullet time into a singular frame, you know, still image type medium?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the challenges there are obvious. I mean, trying to do a car chase in a comic book usually doesn't work. So Nick and I worked really close, and Nick's an incredible artist, and he came up with some really cool idea of, like, he made sound. He actually hand drew all the sound effects in the book, and so he made them so that, like, it's really cool looking and kind of goes along with the motion and adds an extra oomph to it that you don't normally get in a comic, I think, with car chases. And then, of course, obviously, you know, like with bullets and all that kind of stuff, Nick did some really cool effects for that kind of stuff too. And then Charlie Kirchhoff, the colorist, he came in and took it to another level. So, you know, all three of us worked really closely to try to, like, figure out how we could make something different that we haven't done in comics before. So hopefully we attained some of that.
Excellent, excellent. And you point out that all the sound effects are hand-drawn. I don't know if people realize how much comics and drawing has moved over to the digital medium, you know, with stylus pads and what have you. Most of your comics now, all the lettering is done digitally, but like the Comic Sans font that everybody hates is literally for comics. So and I use it a lot here, but I tell people it's a comic book shop. That's what it's intended for. Right? So how many issues are you in?
Oh, we're in the third issue. Just came out 2 weeks ago.
All right.
So we're in the three issues, and it's going to be a total of five.
Total of five? Do you have a second arc or second mini-series planned?
The Hard Place, not at the moment. We'll see how the first five go over and how the trade comes out, and then we'll, you know, then we'll start thinking about what we're going to do for the second one.
And you said for The Hard Place, you don't, which implies that you do for Plastic?
As far as there's rumors that, you know, there might be some more Plastic on its way, but we'll see what happens there.
Excellent, excellent. Now, in talking about Plastic, what's the elevator pitch on Plastic?
This one's usually pretty easy. A retired serial killer is in love with a blow-up sex doll, and somebody has taken his blow-up sex doll. So that's pretty much, you know, what the entire elevator pitch. And usually people either run in horror when I say sex doll, or they lean in and go, "Oh, really?"
are we talking a high dollar sex doll, like a real doll, or no? You're talking a more economical, inflatable, classic cheesy type sex doll.
It's funny, you know, after all this time and doing interviews and stuff, nobody's actually asked me that question, and I love it. It's actually a cross. So we decided. I actually did some research. There's the cheap dolls, you know, and they don't look so hot. And then there's the real dolls, and they're like 6,000. And I just didn't see our serial killer guy, like, being able to afford 6,000, but he wouldn't go for the $14.95 version either. So Daniel and I kind of created a mash of the two. So it's kind of somewhere in the middle there, you know.
So how many hours did you spend researching the scale of quality of sex dolls?
Oh, I lost track at some point.
I bet those were great phone calls. What kind of dolls do you carry? No, I swear it's just for research purposes. Yeah, it is.
The scary part is when I was actually looking at the real doll site, and it's funny that you bring that up, my wife actually walked in when I was doing that. And she did the whole, you know, what the heck is, you know, and I said, time out, I'm working on a book, like, come over here. And then I said, you got to come check these things out, because I don't know if you've ever looked at it, but, like, these things are crazy. Like, I can't believe how real they look. And you go in, and she's, after, you know, 5 minutes of looking at him, she's like, these things are amazing. You know, it's like, it's just, they're almost sex androids. I mean, they're that close.
You know, and I've seen some of the, like, they do small scale, like, models or whatever, because it's, you know, for that price, it's hard to call it a doll or a toy, you know. But, and even those run, you know, $1,000.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
And the company that makes the real dolls actually makes, you know, miniature, you know, like 1/12 scale or whatever, you know, action figures. And they go into the same level of detail. That's the scary thing.
Right.
But they do, you know, superheroes or whatever. And they actually make one of Stan Lee, which is scary in its own right.
See, Larry, I didn't need to know that.
Like, the 90-year-old Stan Lee.
Yeah. I didn't need to know that. That's too much, man.
They actually approached me about looking for a vendor. I was like, you know, that's just not our market.
Yeah.
You know, some things you should just leave to buying on the internet.
Exactly. I agree completely, 100%.
So, you know, I love the covers. We were talking earlier off, you know, off the record there about some of the covers, the different heads.
Right.
Were all the different creators of the book. You know, so you have a series where the cat is, you know, chewing this plastic bag, trying to get at the head inside, you know.
Right.
So what's up with the cat? Tell us about the cat. Because he makes, what, two cover appearances?
Or no, it's just one cover appearance.
Just the one cover appearance?
So Laura Martin, who's the colorist of the book, that's on her cover. And Laura actually works at rescue shelters and helps cats. And so Daniel kind of laughs, you know, and he was like, I'm going to do a cover with her head on it, and I think I'm going to call her a cat lady. You know, and actually Laura ended up loving it. We were worried she's going to be mad, you know. It's like, you don't know if people like being called cat lady or not. But he put a cute cat on there with a severed head, and then he put these bright colors on it. And for some reason, people are loving that cover.
Well, so, it's a great cover, and that, you know, now, I call my wife a dog lady, you know,
yeah,
because she has a bunch of rescue dogs, you know, and, you know, people are usually cat people or dog people or hate animals.
Right.
You know? and I'm more of a cat person.
Yeah.
But the joke is, are cats an asshole? Yeah. Which all cats are, you know, because, yeah, that's, you know, dog people are like, oh, you know, this is my German Shepherd purebred. He's wonderful, well-trained. And cat people are like, this is Tabby. He's gray, and he'll bite you if you're not looking.
Right, yeah, the second you turn your head, he's going to take a chunk.
But we always joke about the cat eating you when
right.
you die. And that's what maybe, you know, caught my eyes. I don't know if that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah, that's the way you're seeing the rest of your life, right? That's the end of your life is that cover.
Right, right. Have you found these books been received?
Well, Plastic has done great. I don't know how much you kept track of, like, what was going on with the first and second issue, but those sold out day one, which completely blew us away. Like, Daniel and I, well, the whole team, we kind of, some of the team thought it was going to do well. Some of us had doubts, including myself. You don't know when you put a book together like that how it's going to be received.
Anything I produce and put out there, I personally always have self-doubt.
Right.
It's like, if it's my piece of art, I'm like, oh, well, this looks like crap. Somebody else, oh, it's fine, you know.
Yeah. But there's something about a serial killer and a sex doll on a weird, odd, quirky book that people are identifying with, and sold out first issue and second issue the first day, and then it did fantastic, and the trade's been doing well, too. So.
Well, you know, I think we all have that inner voice serial killer, you know. You know, I mean, because who hasn't thought, oh, man, you know, I really want to just strangle that guy or whatever, you know, if stuck in traffic or at work or, you know, thankfully, now I don't have those thoughts at work, but, you know, traffic is still traffic.
Well, and I think, too, like, the other thing is I think all of us, every human being has something they love so much that if somebody took it from them or hurt it, they would kill somebody over it. And so I think whether it's inanimate or animate, you know, like your cat, you know, if somebody came in and hurt your cat, you'd probably beat the crap out of it. You know, you're like, don't touch my cat, don't touch my dog. But some people, it's maybe not a cat or a dog. Maybe it's their car. You know, don't. I love my car. Don't touch it. So I think that's where, like, I think people can identify with Edwin. Because, like you said, not only do we all have road rage at some level or another, but there's something in our lives that we love so much that if somebody messed with it, you're going to pay a price. So.
Yeah, and he just happens to be a serial killer.
Right, so. Yeah. He happens to have unique skills.
And that's also a 5-issue arc, right?
That's correct.
All right, and I believe it's near done. Is there one issue?
Oh, no, it's already done.
Done.
The trade just came out last week.
All right.
So.
Excellent. So the trade just came out last week, and are you selling out on that?
No, we have. Well, the good thing about Image on Trade is they tend to print quite a few, like 4 times whatever the initial orders are. So it won't sell out coming out, you know, immediately out of the gate. But we, you know, we'll see how it does, you know, month after month after month.
Well, you know, and Image has really revolutionized the way comics are read. If you ask me, I know. While Image may not be the best-selling comic line, they're definitely the best-selling line of trades. And, of course, listeners, when we say trades, we're talking about collected story arcs, and basically paperbacks. And we have a lot of people that when you say comic book, that's exactly what they think of. They don't even think of the monthly or what we would call in the industry, the monthlies or floppies. And that's a change they've made in the past 20 years or so. I mean, Image has been around for about 30 years now.
It was, 1992 when they first came out?
Yeah, something like that. I guess 25 years then.
Right.
Yeah. At some point, when they started, the way they started doing trades... it just changed it, and Marvel and DC noticed, and they followed suit. And that's how you know they were doing something right. So they're really known for their trades, and I know Image is known for bringing off the wall stuff out there and taking chances. Now they're also known for letting creators do their own thing. So did you approach Image with this book, or did they? They approach you for a book.
No, I actually approached them at San Diego 2 years ago, in 2016. And I'd worked with Eric in the past on The Ride, which was in 2004. And I called him up and said, hey, how do you feel about, me pitching you some new books? And Kevin Gardner, who's with 12 Gauge, he was in the pitch meeting as well. And we just met with Eric, and he's like, yeah, I got 15 minutes, let's talk it over. And so we had several of the books, like Plastic, we already had 2 issues completely drawn, ready to go. So we're showing him this stuff, and Eric is a very stoic person, so he's very hard to read in a pitch meeting. And luckily for me, he picked up both books. So... I just got lucky there, but Image, we approached them, he loved it, immediately picked it up and decided to put it out. So
why approach Image versus Marvel or DC or Aftershock or Dark Horse or one of the other smaller publishers?
Well, with the good thing, what I love about Image is they let you retain 100% of your rights. So that was kind of appealing to everybody that was involved, for the creators and stuff. Now, that keeps them from giving you money up front, but the fact that you keep 100% of all rights when you're done is something that I wanted for both these books, because I feel like the properties are strong enough that I wanted to keep all the rights to them. So, in other words, they do pay you money, but a lot of times they want like 50% or more of the property. And, that kind of takes it out of your hands. So,
And I heard maintaining some of the rights, can be a good thing. I heard it worked out well for Lucas.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. Yeah. Well, and Kirkman.
Which, definitely, he's a busy man nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
I heard he just recently signed something with Hulu.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't hear that one. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, or basically, not necessarily him, but like his branch.
Right, Skybound.
Skybound. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Which, what branch is publishing Plastic in the Hard Place
Image
here?
Image Central.
Image Central?
Yeah, just
okay.
Straight up. Yep, the regular Image.
So, with the different branches, would you approach each head of that branch, or?
Yeah, I think in the, you know, if you're pitching to them, like, they all have their own submission guidelines. But I think Jim Valentino, you know, he's obviously in charge of the shadow line.
Right.
I don't think Robert, you know, because he's so busy with, like, AMC and all the other stuff he's doing, I don't think he necessarily has, you're not going to pitch directly to him. So I'm not sure who you would talk to directly at Skybound. And then Image Central is Eric Stevenson. So just depending on who you're going to throw at.
Yeah, and I would imagine McFarland has other stuff going on as well.
Yeah, he does
a lot. And I haven't seen, so do you think it's more advantageous to be with Image Central versus one of their other little sub-branches?
I don't know. I mean, I've met several of those guys, and they're all fantastic guys. And I mean, I don't know to be honest with you, I don't know the benefits of anybody but Image Central, because that's all I've done so far. So, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know how it'd be working. I know Donnie Cates with, like, Redneck, and what was the other one he just did? God Country.
Oh.
I think both of those are with Skybound. So, obviously, he loves working with those guys. So, I think, you know, it's depending on who you get picked up by. I think, I'm sure they're all great. But I don't know which one would be more advantageous than the other.
Well, I know having the big eye on the book definitely means people are more likely to give it a shot.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Did you notice now we notice a lot of people they'll pick up a number one and then that's all they'll pick up. This is gonna be the first. So do you think you had a big drop off between one and two? Or do you think Plastic maybe you did a little better?
Well, definitely did a little better. What's really interesting working with Image Central is like they give you a chart of what they think. You know, after all these years of publishing comics, 25 years, they've kind of got the formula down. And so they can tell you what the normal attrition is. And so we had a less of a drop than the standard drop between 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. So definitely Plastic performed better than the average comic book, according to their formulas. So that was fantastic, but we didn't have quite the drop. But yeah, I mean, 1 obviously outsold 2. You know, you got a lot of
speculators
out there, like you just said, are going to pick up 1, especially on online stores. They just, I want all the Image number 1s. So, you know, you're going to get the attrition. There's no way you can really fight that.
Oh, and yeah, there's definitely no way around that. And it's funny, you see a lot of people buy number 1s and immediately try and sell it. And of course, the real money, you know, which everybody's hoping it's going to be the next Walking Dead or whatever. But when they say that, they don't realize that, well, that Walking Dead wasn't anything for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
Yeah, I've heard people like, oh, I want to follow the Robert Kirkman method of being successful in comics. I'm like, well, you realize, like, he put out 2 books for 10 years, sometimes not selling well at all, and then it made something. So are you willing to sacrifice 10 years of your life to try to make something like that work?
Right, because, you know, I want to say that it was issue with, once they were right or close to around issue 52, they announced the weekly series, you know, where they were going to redo all 52,
right,
the first 52 weekly. And that was about the time they started releasing cast photos of the show, you know. And of course, you know, I bought my number 1 in that book way beyond then for nothing. And, you know, I couldn't afford it nowadays.
Oh, no, yeah.
But, of course, it's because, you know, I was a zombie fan, so, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the most, I always tell people, collect stuff you love.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, what other books have you had success with in the past that have kept you going in the comic book industry, or?
Yeah, well, we started out in 2004 with Image, with a book called The Ride, which is kind of like an anthology crime book. Completely black and white, done with great, you know, every chapter is drawn by a different artist, several of the chapters are written by different people. That was great. I also worked on, 25 to Life, with, believe it or not, Eric LaSalle was the co-writer of the book and the creator of the property. Then I moved on to where I did a lot of stuff for DC Custom. So I've done World of Warcraft, Bloodsworn trade paperback. I did several issues of Legends of the Dark Knight and Batman Arkham Origins. I got asked to help with a Choose Your Own Adventure graphic novel.
Nice.
So there was like five or six of us writing that book, and it was fantastic to like get to work on like, okay, here's your storyline. Okay, here's all the branches it's going to take. Yeah, so a lot of fun working with that kind of stuff. And then, you know, with DC Custom, you also do a lot of stuff like, I worked with the Flash and the Arrow TV shows, like doing single-page comic teasers before the episode came out. And, like, I did a Man of Steel comic for the National Guard. You know, stuff like that that a lot of people don't see, but I enjoyed, you know, I got to touch all the big guys. So that was...
So how's it like working with those, highly controlled, known properties, you know?
Well, it's definitely different. It's more like a corporate job, you know. You don't get to necessarily stretch your wings as much as you would like. Because obviously, I mean, if you're doing a comic for the National Guard that starts, that's based on the Man of Steel movie, they're not going to let you, like, take Zack Snyder's vision and taint it. You know,
right,
it's like,
right.
Yeah, you got to kind of follow the
parameters. You can't give him a backstory where, you know, he's over here. And
yeah. Well, you know, the classic Superman chest, you know, he pulls his shirt back and shows the ass. Like, they were like, he doesn't do that anymore. And I was like, oh. So, you know, you find stuff like that that's like, oh, well, I got to take that panel out and what I put in its place. You know, so, you're definitely on a shorter leash with that kind of stuff. I can't do plastic in the hard place for companies like that because they're just not going to let me run and be crazy. But, you know, I still enjoyed it, and all the people I worked with were great. So, you know, it's just a different mindset. You know, you realize you're working with somebody else's baby, not your own, and that, you know, you can't run with Batman, you know, and do whatever you want to do with Batman. So, you know, it's just what it is. You know, it's all part of the job.
So, definitely do you prefer working with your own stuff, with creating your own visions, so I'd find that more fulfilling, I assume?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love, like, especially with the past two ones. I've had great teams with it, with artists, colors, and letters on both books have been fantastic to work with. Image has been great to work with. And getting the chance to kind of, like, play in your own sandbox and, like, cut loose. And, like, whatever you come up with, no matter how crazy it is, if it works with the story, throw it in there. So that's been fun, you know, and I do prefer that. Is, you know, you really don't have a true editor. Your team's kind of your editor, so everybody kind of joins in and, like, you know, Laurel might be like, hey, I don't think this line of dialogue's working, so I'll figure out a way to fix it to where everybody likes it. But it's not the same as having, like, an editor, per se. So I do like the image format and how it works.
So what do you think is next? We have assassins and serial killers.
Yep. Well, I've got three new books coming out from Image next year. I'm not allowed to talk a whole lot about them. I can tell you that one of them's going to be drawn by Hoyt Silva. Another one's going to be done by Daniel Hilliard, who also did the plastic. So there's, you know, we're going to have a lot of fun stuff, but I would like to, you know, I can't. Eric likes to announce those things, not me. So
no title drops, no nothing like that?
No, not yet. Not
all
yet.
All right. Any time of year we should be looking for those announcements?
We're probably looking at, well, most likely you'll hear some announcement at Emerald City.
Okay.
So for at least two of those books.
Excellent. Are they going to go on to star even less savory characters, perhaps lawyers and politicians?
No, I don't want to deal with lawyers or politics. That stuff, nobody would believe any of that anyway. You know, you could write real world stuff about that, nobody's going to believe it. I'm not sure I believe any of it now. But no, nothing like lawyers or politicians. But we're going to have spies and, you know, serial killers and, you know, other stuff happening. So it should be a lot of fun.
I've seen some crazy Trump parody books.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where it's just the off-the-wall titles make you laugh.
Yeah.
So I noticed they did the, you've got the Image anniversary cover there.
Right.
They've done a whole series in that. Did you get to decide what issue you parodied?
Oh, no. Well, for The Hard Place, yes. So we did, the number 3 issue had a Walking Dead variant. And we definitely got to decide there, like, which we submitted a couple. And then Eric was like, okay, this is the one that's available. Because, like, the first two we picked had already been grabbed immediately. And so, you know, you kind of get to help pick. But, like, in the Spawn one we did, that was just completely like, hey, here's the rules. Do something that looks like Spawn. You know, they gave us some guidelines and stuff, which was fantastic. And, I mean, I'm honored that they selected my book to do any of the variants like that. But it was fantastic to be included in it.
So, when are we expecting the trade for the hard place?
I believe that's the first week of March, is what they just told me. Yep, so not too far from now.
So we got potentially more plastic and three more books coming out maybe next year.
Yeah.
You know, that you can't tell me that their name is...
No, I'm sorry. I know you'd like to, I know everybody would like to hear them now, but until an image clears that stuff, I don't want to step on any toes.
Fair enough. Yeah, definitely don't want to get them mad at you and go, oh, well, we're not put this one out yet.
Yeah, I don't want to get a call tomorrow saying, hey, we're canceling your books, you know.
So, most people, of course, think you must be a millionaire making wild money and all this stuff doing it. But I've always got the vibe that it was more of a labor of love.
Yes.
So, is this your main profession?
It is my main profession. Yep. I do. You know, from time to time, have part time jobs to kind of help monthly, you know, bills get paid. But I do this full time now, especially with the success of Plastic and the Hard Place. And that's my total focus now.
And you mentioned your wife earlier. Is she a comic book fan?
Yep, she loves comics. Her big one is Lumberjanes. She loves Lumberjanes. She loves Saga. She loves Paper Girls. I think Paper Girls might be her favorite. And then she reads my books, and, you know, she's like,
this is okay.
Yeah. Sorry, you know Brian K. Vaughan, but, you know, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I can't deny that. I can't fight that one.
Well, and, you know, Saga, of course, is one of the best-selling trades year after year out, it seems. Hard to compete with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's well-deserved. Both Brian and Fiona put their heart and soul in that book, and it shows. You know, it's a gorgeous book. It's a great, you know, well-written. You know, so, yeah, they deserve what they're pulling off.
One of the oddball books that I didn't think I would enjoy was Sex Criminals.
Oh, yeah.
And that book makes me laugh. Yeah, you know, so, you know... When you're saying shy about the sex doll book, and it's like,
that's not going to affect you. Yeah.
Not going to bother me at all. Yeah. So, anything you didn't get to cover in Plastic that you wanted to cover, or that, or is that all going to be covered in the next one?
Well, I can tell you, like, we pretty much did exactly what we wanted in that first one. That's all we had originally was, like, we didn't know how it would be received, so we didn't think about anything past the five issues. So we got to tell that five issues has a story we had in mind. And I think we really captured everything we wanted to do in that book. And maybe that's why it's done so well, is that we were able to put everything in there we wanted to put in there. So we're pretty happy with the way that one turned out.
So the second story that you might be telling, did it arise naturally after the working on this book, or
it took
did
a
you
while.
Go hunting for it?
No, it took a while. We are still talking about whether that should be the next book we do or not. You know, it's like a constant, like, well, I mean, you know, because usually sequels hurt the original property. We're pretty happy with the first one. Like, do we want to do a second one? We don't know for sure.
Do we really need an episode one?
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like, do you want to, like, I mean, I love, you know, there's so many movies that I love, and then they do a sequel, and I got to pretend like that sequel didn't exist because it ruined the first one too for me.
Well, I think Harrison Ford agrees with you. I think it's in his contract. If he plays as a sequel, he has to die.
Yeah. See, I mean, you know, it's weird to see them come back and revisit all that Harrison Ford stuff. I think he's doing a sequel to everything he ever did in the 80s and 90s. But...
And I think he's dying in all of them.
Yeah. Put those characters to bed.
Yeah. I think with Indiana Jones, they're ignoring the last one completely. They're my bad.
Yeah, and they should. You know, they should.
Well, you know, and they might have been able to save it, but what's his name had to go all crazy.
LaBeouf.
Yeah, LaBeouf. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. Yeah, his personality now is not helping that bug. I think with that one, they just got confused and forgot what got him there, which was World War II feel and archaeology. And they, you know, they kind of went in a strange direction with aliens.
And yeah.
That just didn't really fit. I mean, everything.
It gave it a sci-fi twist that it just didn't need.
Yeah. And everything before that was religion. You know, it was religion based. So the fact that they went in that direction to me was always kind of like, wow, what are you guys thinking? Like, you're losing the what got you here, you know? You strayed too far. So, you know, I'm sure it was an experiment. They wanted to see if it worked. And
yeah, well, and they can't all be successes,
no,
right?
No, yeah.
Well, you know, have you had any books that you thought would do better and didn't? Speaking of, they can't all be successes.
Oh. Yeah, I honestly thought the World of Warcraft book would do a lot better than it did when it came out, because that was the first time the Horde had been covered. But I think by that time, they had done so much great World of Warcraft stuff that it kind of, like, run its course. I just happened to come in at the wrong time on that, but I was hoping it would do better than it did. I mean, it did fine, but it didn't do as well as I was hoping it would.
Now, it seems so hard, like, to cover a good video game medium. Because so much video game, the story is already integrated in there, and you're like, well, this is already clearly defined. How am I working with in this, it seems like it'd be very tough to get a good story because you'd be even more confined,
right?
Yeah. If you could work with any particular property, is there one that you haven't worked with that you'd love? Is there a superhero tale you're just itching to tell?
Yeah. I don't have any particular, you know, stories in mind for any of it, but like, I mean, I grew up as a kid. I mean, what got me into comics to begin with was X-Men. And if I ever got a chance to, like, you know, that's the holy grail to me. You know, if I could ever draw, you know, get a chance to write X-Men after, you know, the impact it had on me as a kid, that would be, you know, like a dream come true. But, you know, as far as, like, I don't know if I necessarily have a story in my head yet that would be, you know, good enough for me to write the X-Men. But if I had a choice, like, I'd rather them give me, like, a character, Marvel or DC, you know, if I was on one of their ships, like, give me a character you really don't care about, and let me see if I can make them popular. Let me see if I can make them a good character. So, you know,
because that would probably be the easiest way to do it, is with a character. Oh, you don't care if I change this just a little bit.
Yeah. But, you know, they did that with, like, Blue Beetle, which I thought was a fantastic, you know, kind of rebooted the character when they did it with, Jaime Hernandez, or Jaime, I guess is the way you should pronounce it. You know, so they've done it from time to time. It's just like, I don't know if I can bring anything new to Batman or Superman or, you know, Wolverine. It's kind of like there's so much 70 years of, you know, stories of those characters. It's like, I don't know, with, you know, if you don't cut the leash loose, if I have anything new to add. I'd rather give me somebody you, like I said, you know, I hope you don't care about, and I don't want involved in events, and let me run and see if I can do something with them, you know.
That is one thing you don't see a lot of with Image, is these company-wide events, because they're all set in separate worlds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've seen a few crossovers and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, the only one coming to mind right now is the Revival Chew crossover.
Right.
Which seemed like an odd crossover, but hey, it worked.
Yep. Yeah. Well, then, they've done, like, Spawn Batman. They tried the Image United thing. And, you know, so there has been some crossovers, but you're right. Like, really, there's no reason to have a lot of crossovers for Image books, because they're all creator-owned books, and it's like, yeah, these two don't mesh, you know.
So could you see any of your characters crossing over to another books, and if so, which ones?
Oh, man, that's tough. I mean, you know, if I crossed over, it'd be with some of the writers that I absolutely love. You know, that's Jim Zub and Justin Jordan and Brian K. Vaughan. And, you know, maybe you mix in... The Hard Place with Southern Bastards, or, you know, Ian Plastic, and maybe, I don't know. I wonder if you could put that in the Luther Strode universe. You know, like.
But no, the Hard Place and Southern Bastards, that seems like a good fit. Yeah.
You know, there's somewhere between Detroit and, you know, Tuscaloosa, Alabama that can work,
you know,
right?
There could be something that drives them all to Vegas or something. Yeah.
Get a totally different feel for it. That'd be great.
So, tell us a little about your process.
Oh, my process? It's probably a little bit more complicated than it should be, but I tend to, like, break everything down into smaller steps. So I start out by basically just writing, like, a 2 or 3 paragraph, you know, quick summary of the idea. And then I take that and I kind of start creating an outline. And once I get the outline done, then I break it down page by page because I want to make sure all my page turns are working correctly. And then I go panel by panel. And then I write a script. So by the time I get to script, I already know how the page looks. And, you know, how many panels are on each page. And kind of write dialogue that I think will work. But I know that there's a good chance that when the artist turns in the pages, I'm going to want to touch that stuff up. So then I send off that, you know, script to the artist, get my feedback, make any corrections they think I need to make. And then once I turn in the pages, I'll wait for an entire issue. And then I usually spend like a 6 to 8 hour day just sitting down and polishing all the dialogue to hopefully make it better. So, you know, there's obviously, like I said, it's a little bit more complicated than it maybe needs to be, but that's what works for me.
Now, when you pick an artist, did you have a idea in mind of, like, I have this visual appearance that I was kind of thinking for the book, and I think this guy can do it? Or did you, I think this guy's style would work really well with this character?
Yeah, oh, no, definitely. Like, I more look for an artist who I think style will work with the property beforehand. I don't want to, like, try to have change their style or make them draw in a different way. So Daniel was perfect for Plastic because, you know, we got that, like, he's a little, sometimes he can be on the cartoony side as far as, like, you know, he's not like a Jim Lee, you know, style of artist. And since there's some dark comedy in there, I thought, man, he's going to be able to pull this off, and he's great with acting. And Edwin's like one of these complicated characters who can go from, like, chopping somebody's head off to giving you the sweetest smile you've ever seen. And so he was so good at that kind of stuff, and then doing the creepy stuff in the background, and he's just perfect for that book. And then Nick Rommel on The Hard Place, like, he's got a very graphic style, harder, thicker lines, and I wanted to kind of take that and use that in, you know, like what I've been referring to as the action noir style of book. So I go and find, like, the artist whose style fits what I think the property could use to help me look better.
You know? So you've written some traditional novel or non-graphic novels.
Right.
How do you feel that's different now? How do you feel your process is different?
That's a tough one. Because now my process is kind of written in stone, and I think even if I was trying to write a prose book, I'd probably still use a very similar method as to what I use now because it works for me. You know, now when you're talking about the stuff like with the Arrow and Flash, like, they might call me at like 6 or 7 at night, and I have to turn in a page by, you know, 8 a.m. the next morning. And they're like, oh, here's the clip, write something.
And I assume your process then involves caffeine.
Yeah, it's a lot of caffeine, and it's a lot, you know, I have to, it's not as complicated, you know, it's like, okay, well, what, I need to do one page, what's that going to look like, where's the beginning and the end, what's in the middle, and then start writing, because, you know, I don't want to spend more than, say, 3 or 4 hours on that one page. But, you know, so, yeah, it's definitely streamlined. Where, like, hey, I've got to get this done a lot quicker. So,
did you always want to start writing comics, or just were you always wanting to be a writer, or is it total an accident for you to fall into the?
Oh, no, I am a comic guy through and through. At the age of 17, I walked into my mom's room and I said, I want to be a comic book writer. Of course, her initial response was like, that's a horrible idea. What's your plan B? And so that's been my plan all along. I'm not interested in writing books. I'm not interested in writing screenplays or TV. I want to do comics, and I want to stay in comics for the rest of my life. I love comics. That's all I care about.
How's that worked out for you?
So far, yeah. I mean, that was a rough ride getting here. I won't lie. I mean, there's a lot of sacrifices and stuff you have to make to get to this point. But luckily, you know, this year I've had some really good successes, and so it's paid off and after a long time.
Yeah. Well, that's great to hear. Well, you may be unaware that we actually have a lot of artists that patronize our establishment. I graduated one of the local art schools. The former owner, he graduated the same art school. So we have the occasional class that is taught here.
Oh, wow.
So I always like to ask if you have any advice for people who want to break into the comic book industry.
Yeah. The trick is you've got to be hard-headed. You've got to be persistent. And I think, you know, the toughest one, even for me when I was younger, is learning to, like, let rejection roll off your back. Because that's the only way you're going to get in. If you go look at, like, I think Jim Lee's had, like, over 600 rejections before he got in. Todd McFarlane, I think it was over 700. And so you can tell, like, to turn in 700 times and still get rejected and still keep coming is what you have to be able to handle mentally to be able to make it in this industry. Like, you have to, rejection has to be your friend. And so you have to kind of embrace it and go, well, what I tell a lot of, like, starting writers is they're like, well, what's the one piece of advice you'd give me? I go, get your first 100 rejections as fast as you can. And they're like, 100? I'm like, I get your first 100. Now, you might be lucky enough that the second one gets picked up or even the first one, but your goal should be to get 100 rejection letters as quickly as you possibly can. And I think that could probably pay off for artists, too, is like, you know what, just go ahead and get rejected as much as you can, because then you build up your skin. And when you do make it, when they're like, hey, I need you to change this panel, or I'm not sure I like the way you wrote this dialogue, it doesn't crush you. And, you know, you're like, oh, I can't work for a week because I'm depressed.
Yeah, get your first 100 rejections. That sounds like my dating strategy.
Exactly,
in high school.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, it's. I mean, you can kind of turn it into a fun game, you know. I mean, that's what I've done. It's like, you know, it's you can't, with that kind of stuff now, when I was younger, I won't lie, like, if I got a rejection, it might stop me from writing for 3 or 4 months because I was just devastated.
Oh, I'm horrible.
Right.
No.
And I was. Yeah. I mean, clearly I was not ready. But then, you know, as you keep getting them and keep getting them, after a while, you're just like, yeah, I mean, it's, you got to realize, like, when you're getting a rejection letter, it's that person's opinion. It's not a fact. It's an opinion that they don't like your current work. And that's fine. Not everybody's going to like your work.
So how many things do you, have you had submitted to somebody, got rejected, submitted to somebody else, and eventually they picked it up?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I've been pretty lucky there as far as, like, when I've pitched stuff. Usually in the first 3 or 4, it gets picked up. I think one of my favorite stories about that is I wrote an Aliens versus Predator story back in the day. And it was like a 12-pager that was supposed to be in Dark Horse Presents. And I sent it in, and 2 months later, I got the rejection letter. And I go, well, they're wrong. So I resent it. Got another rejection letter. After the fourth time, Mike Richardson actually sent me a personal note and said, quit sending this in. We've rejected it. You know, so that's the kind of, like, hard-headed stupidity you kind of need to make it. You know, it's like,
trust, we actually saw it.
Yeah.
We just didn't like it.
Like, quit sending this in. And I'm like, okay, I get the message now. You know, it's like,
do you have that letter framed somewhere?
Oh, I don't have it framed, but I definitely still have it in the cabinet. You know, it's like, because that one was always funny to me. I mean, I look at it now and, like, because I was a lot younger. And I was just like, man, what was I thinking? Like, sending that in 4 times is just, like, one of the stupidest things I've ever heard.
And to the same people.
Yeah.
I've done it for a while.
Which, of course, you know, I guess something like that, you'd have to send it in to the same people, them having the rights.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, Dark Horse Presents, that is actually one of those books that my wife loves because she's a big fan of anthologies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So have you ever dabbled in drawing at all?
Oh, no.
No. I've just stuck to the literary.
That's something I've never been good at all. Like, as far as, like, I mean, I'm even horrible at doing, you know, the basic box or circle, you know. So I'm like, you know, if I can't even do a box, there's no reason for me to do this. You know, it's just not, and it's just not something, honestly, that I have the focus to do long term. It's just I've never had, you know, writing I've always loved doing, and I love coming up with stories and concepts. But, you know, being able to do one page a day, like, freaks me out.
You know? So, if somebody asks you what you do, do you tell them, I'm a comic book writer,
oh, yeah,
or just, I'm a writer?
I say I'm a comic book writer, yep.
So, do you consider that a different profession than a writer?
A little bit. I mean, I think all writing, just like, and you said you were from art school, like, I think whether you're doing comic books or TV or movie or prose or journalism or poetry, they're all so different. To me, it's like me asking you to draw me a sketch with a pencil or a sketch with, you know, paints. You know, they're so different in how your mind works and how you're going to approach it, that I say comic book writer because it is definitely a specific skill. And I've seen people try to come over from other mediums and try to write comics, and it rarely works out because it's just not, you know, there's a different language to it.
And it's funny you mentioned that. One of my favorite, I'm a Stephen King fan.
Oh, yeah.
I love his books, but I'm not a big fan of his comics.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's just, this is way too verbose.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a comic. Because, The Stand.
Right.
Now, that's a long book, but I really enjoy it. You know, it's like 1,200 pages.
Yeah.
But the comic took years.
Oh, yeah.
It's like each chapter was about 6 months, and I'm like, I just can't stick with this book for this long.
Well, when you got a 1,200-page graphic, I mean, prose novel, trying to turn that into anything that resembles a comic book, to me, that even makes my head hurt now. It's like, it's painful for me to think, like, how are you possibly going to make that work? You know, it's so difficult.
Well, and I think, I can't remember if they ever finished The Dark Tower either.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, and the funny thing is, he has tons of short stories. You could have chose of those, might have worked.
And some fantastic short stories that I think could do well as a comic. You know, that's what's great.
So, when you're reading comics, obviously, you said you're a big X-Men fan.
Right.
Are you still sticking with X-Men?
Well, I'm not quite as heavy into Marvel and DC anymore. Still love superheroes, but I'm not quite as enamored with them as I used to be. So, yeah, I dabble in X-Men, Daredevil, you know, Batman, of course. You know, I mean, I think everybody on the planet buys, well, every comic reader buys Batman in some form or fashion. You know, and then I'll pick up miscellaneous issues here or there, see what's going on. I'm dying to see what Donnie Cates does with Thanos and Doctor Strange, because I love his redneck and God Country stuff. But most of my stuff is like, you know, I mean, it's going to sound like I'm toeing the company line, but a lot of stuff I'm reading right now is actually from Image. So, you know, obviously Saga, Paper Girls, Rednecks, a Redneck, Moonstruck I really like. What's the Redlands by Jordy Belair. Shirtless Bear Fighter. Love it. One of the funniest books on the market.
Yeah, you know, we just sold that like crazy. Our store manager, Travis, he picked that up, and he's like, this is going to be a great book. This is everything I need out of a comic right here. And, yeah, that was by far one of our best-selling Image books this year.
Yeah.
I mean, short of Saga and Walking Dead, it probably was, you know, because we ended up reordering that number one like 3 times.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, Plastic is up there, too, in some of our best-selling Image books this year. You know, and I think a lot has to do with some of your great covers. They're always eye-catching, weird, off the wall. So much credit there. So when you get some of these great covers, did you go, okay, I'm kind of thinking something like this? Or did the artist come to you and say, hey, I have this idea?
Yeah.
You know,
Well, the Andrew Robinson covers, I mean, 9 times out of 10, you don't have to help Andrew at all. Like, he'll come to you with a cover, and you're like, oh, my God, that's better than anything I could have ever come up with. But what's great is he'll actually email you and say, hey, do you guys have any direction you want me to go in? So sometimes you can supply a little bit of, like, hey, what if we did something along these lines? You know, what if we included this on the cover? that kind of thing. With Daniel, Daniel's fantastic. It's like he sends you like a real basic marker sketch. He's like, hey, I'm thinking this. What do you think? We switch, you know, notes back and forth until we come up with something that's like we both really love. He's actually an Englishman that lives in Spain. So over there, you know, they kind of frown on the gory stuff more so. And the nudity stuff not so much, which is the opposite as it is here. So the fun thing with Daniel is I kept having to go, more blood. No, I mean more blood. More blood than that. You know, so it's like, you know, over here, it's, you know, we're in America, dude. Like, this book's coming out in America. We can do all the blood we want. You know, nobody's going to care. So, you know, that was like, it was kind of funny because you can tell, like, he was just, like, slowly stepping into it. You know, like, oh, I don't want to put too much blood on this. I'm like, oh, no, you can't put too much blood on this.
Yeah, and I've often wondered about that while we're like, you know, we could kill everybody, but you show a boob, you've got a rating R, an R-rated movie.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. I mean, I you know, half the world is sexually repressed, but there's something wrong with America when it comes to, like, one boob and you're rated X. You know, it's like, what are you talking about? So,
well, you know, definitely, and we're a little more lenient with comics as and you know, other non-visual media, right. It seems. And I've often thought that was a little weird. You know, I've had people say, "Oh, I won't let my kids watch violent TV," but he really likes the Walking Dead comic. And, you know, and I'm like, really? Yeah. You know? Yeah, I was like, okay. There's no nudity in it, right? Well, not really.
Yeah, it's always a weird market. It's I get the same thing. Like, I'll see people completely repulsed with the idea of a sex doll when I bring it up. But then I'll ask them if they watch Game of Thrones, and they're like, "Oh yeah." And I'm like,
"So incest, you're cool?
Yeah, brother and sister, that's fine. But you bring in a plastic doll, and like, that's out of bounds."
A friend of mine got someone an inflatable sex sheep as a gag gift.
Yes.
And yeah, it's one of those things. He told me that story. He's like, really? Is this a real thing?
Well, it's funny. That actually came up at one of the stores. So, like, they actually purchased, like, the cheapest blow-up doll you can get from Spencer's. But one of the employees there actually worked at a sex shop. And so they called her and they said, hey, what's your cheapest blow-up doll? And she was like, well, if you want a human, the cheapest we have is $80, and those are really nice. And the guy was like, what do you mean human? And she's like, we got a sheep. It runs like $24.95. He's like, what's the cheapest thing you have? And she's like, we got one that's $14.95. He's like, what's that? And she goes, a duck. So there's a blow-up sex duck that you can buy for $15.
Well, it gives new meaning to the phrase, fuck a duck.
That it is. That it does.
So has anybody asked you to sign a blow-up doll?
Yes, I have signed one blow-up doll. That's, which I
was
thought
it
was
a sheep?
Awesome. No, luckily it wasn't a sheep. It was actual, well, it was a plastic woman.
So how did they approach you? Was it inflated?
Oh, yeah, completely inflated, but I was wearing a shirt.
Okay.
So, you know, and sadly, it was called, the box says, Becky the Beginner. Becky happens to be my mother's name, so that made me feel uncomfortable, which I had done, you know, if I broke plastic, I should be okay with that, right? But no, really nice, you know, really nice guy, so, you know, of course I'm signing it for him. He's gonna go to all that trouble, you know.
Right, yeah. I mean, just, where was it? Was it at a shop or a convention?
Oh, it was at a shop. Yeah, I was in a store in Salt Lake City, yeah.
Because I just pictured a guy walking around a Wizard World convention with a giant blow-up doll, you know, just over his shoulder. Da, 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 da.
Now, that unfortunately hasn't happened yet, but I'm hoping that does happen in the future.
So what opportunities have you gotten for being a comic book writer that you don't think you would have gotten elsewise if you had the regular 9-to-5?
Well, I think what's great is, like, over time I've gotten to go to several different shows, gotten invited to great dinners with, you know, fabulous, you know, stars, you know, comic book stars that I consider stars, you know, that, like, I would have never probably ever gotten to eat dinner and just hang out and talk with. But I think probably some of the cooler things is some of the actors and stuff that I've gotten to meet. So like Rosario Dawson, I got to know pretty well over two or three years ago in the cons with her. I actually met Norman Reedus before he was on Walking Dead with him and Sean Patrick Flannery. Both of them fantastic guys and loved hanging out with them.
I assume they were doing some sort of Boondock Saints.
Yes, exactly. They were for some Boondock Saints, which actually...
great movie.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic movie. Legend Mick Foley. I'm a huge wrestling fan, so I got to meet Mick Foley and sit next to him at a table, which was fantastic. So I think those kind of benefits you wouldn't normally, I think you can get photo ops, but getting a chance to sit down and talk to those guys, like say before the doors open at a show, or going to lunch or dinner with them and getting to actually like really know who they, get a sense of who they are, is something I obviously wouldn't have been able to do at a regular 9-to-5. And so those, I know those aren't monetary benefits necessarily, like any kind of financial gain from them, but I'm more interested in those kind of experiences than the financial gain of it. Like,
getting to travel to all the other cities, I think would be wonderful. Get to meet a ton of people. That sounds great. One of my big regrets is I don't get to travel enough.
Right.
We're getting about close to that hour mark. So when we do the podcast, I usually go around the table and ask for final thoughts.
Right.
Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share?
I'd just like to thank you for having me at the store and doing the signing and stuff. It's been wonderful. And thanks for asking me to be on the podcast. That's amazing.
It was my pleasure. It's been great to have you. And, of course, this is a special episode of Geeks of the Square Table, and I've been your host, Lawrence of America. And my guest today was Doug Wagner, author of Plastic and The Hard Place, and more stuff coming out next year and some other titles. So if I were to say you like this book, you should be reading Plastic. And if you love this book, you should be reading The Hard Place. What would those books be?
If you're reading Southern Bastards and you like it, you should be picking up The Hard Place. Plastic's a tougher one. I don't know what else fits in that genre, which is why we're so scared about putting it out. I will say, if you like movies like Lars and the Real Girl, if you like movies like Seven Psychopaths, then you definitely need to be picking up Plastic, because you'll love the book.
All right. Well, we'll see you next time. You can find us wherever good podcasts are sold or bad podcasts given away. Or you can find us at ComicCity2.com, OutrightGeekery.com. Or come join us for one of our regular podcasts every Thursday night at 7 here in Madison, Tennessee. Son of Maddie. Good night, Elaine.